One, we're going to have a few different voices share with you, but I just want to say before we jump into some of the craziness of tonight, welcome, especially if you're new. If this isn't the place that you call home, maybe church is a place you're not totally comfortable with, maybe you don't know where you're at with Jesus, maybe you agree on some things, maybe you're unsure about a few different things, welcome. We didn't always understand, we didn't always have it figured out, surely don't have it figured out now, so we want to say welcome. If you're in a place where you just feel like, man, I'm a believer, but I'm struggling on my own. I'm still trying to figure things out. I still don't have it all together. Maybe believer, non-believer, atheist, Christian, whatever you might be tonight, I just want to talk to the person who might be feeling helpless. Now, contrary to popular belief, it's okay to feel helpless at church. It's okay to not be strong at church. It's okay to feel weak at church. But our hope here, our Sunday night team, our hope for you is that you wouldn't just feel helpless. While we might say that's okay, we want to encourage you tonight so that you're not hopeless. Because it's one thing to not have power to create change. It's one thing to feel weak. It's one thing to feel like you're helpless. It's an entirely different thing to be helpless and without hope. So as we share tonight, man, we're hoping and we're praying that wherever you're at in your journey, you might be encouraged. You might find hope tonight in a real way as we step into that. So welcome. We're excited that you're here. Tonight is going to be an interruption. And I want to ask, are interruptions good or bad? Good, bad? I'm talking to nobody here, huh? Are they good or bad? Both? There's some good interruptions, some bad interruptions. Bad interruptions, your girlfriend, boyfriend, spouse says, we need to talk. Is that a good interruption or a bad interruption? You get a text, we need to talk. Okay, LOL. K, like, oh. Good interruptions. You get a text, you get a call, you hear from a friend. Positive interruptions that we might have. For the married people in the room, sex. Positive interruption. All right. So here's the thing. So as Christians, before you're married, you can't talk about sex. You got to pretend like you're not having the sex that you're having, and you got to be real ashamed. And then you get married and you still got to be ashamed and act like you just don't do it because doing it's unholy. I'm like, hold on a second. Married folks, you know this and it's okay to feel all right about it. Sex is a good interruption, is it not? All right, well. Hey, man, if that joke offended you, you're on for a ride. So here we go. Man, if that joke offended you, this might not be your church. So here we go. There are good interruptions, there are bad interruptions. Tonight is absolutely an interruption. We're going to take a look at an interruption in Nehemiah. We've been talking about Nehemiah. Nehemiah is building. He's on this project. He feels like he's been sent by God to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. How ironic. We're talking about a leader building walls the night before an election. Can't write this stuff, guys. This is just how it happens. How do I say that? Nehemiah. He's rebuilding these walls of Jerusalem. He's on this mission, and all of a sudden that mission comes to a grinding halt, and it's interrupted. Again, they were under attack, they were under threats, but God had sent them. People had been rallied, resources had been gathered. People were risking their lives being a part of this. People had to move from where they were to be a part of what God was doing. Yet, it's interrupted. Nehemiah chapter 5, verse 1. About this time, some of the men and their wives raised a cry of protest against their fellow Jews. They were saying, "We have such large families, we need more food to survive." Others say, "We have mortgaged our fields, vineyards, and homes to get our food during the famine." And others said, "We've had to borrow money on our fields." They had to take out loans, they had to go into debt. "We had to borrow money on our fields and vineyards to pay our taxes. We belong to the same family as those who are wealthy, and our children are just like theirs. Yet we must sell our children into slavery just to get enough money to live. We've already sold some of our daughters, and we were helpless to do anything about it, for our fields and our vineyards were already mortgaged to others." There's an outcry. It says a protest was raised. The poor and the marginalized of the society, those who were there in Jerusalem, were crying out and saying, "Hey, we don't have the resources to go forward. We've had to sell our land. We've had to go into debt. We've sold some of our children into slavery, but you notice, if you look at the text, it says they were sold into slavery twice. The first time, it's the idea of servanthood. The second time, it's this idea of sexual slavery or sex trafficking. It says we've had to give away some of our daughters, and we don't have anything to buy them back with. We are literally helpless to save our own children. Did you notice they even appealed and said, our children, they're just like yours. They're just like theirs, yet we don't have the resources to take care of ours. And all of a sudden, Nehemiah has a decision to make. There's this cry that's gone out, but will he hear it? Because though we've said this is an important thing, this mission from God to build this wall is an incredibly important thing, will he stop the work? Will he continue on? What do you do in your life when the most important thing is interrupted by the most important thing? I don't know how many of you guys enjoy music when you're driving. I love music. I love to sing. I love to dance a little bit in the car. I typically, I'll just get lost in the music and dancing, and then you just, snap out of it, and I don't know if this happened to you, but, 5 minutes later, you're kind of like, who drove by and who saw me? Am I going to get to church? Hey, bro, I saw you getting it. That usually happens to me, and I love listening to music when I drive, and sometimes when I drive or my wife drives us somewhere, I snatch the aux cord because I like to be the DJ, so I'm like, whoop, and I plug in my music, and I start playing it, and if I turn it up, I want to listen to the song, but my wife, as lovely as she is, wants to talk to her husband. What a thought. And there's a conflict because I want to hear my jam. I didn't just put it on to have it play in the background. I want to sing along. I've been practicing this verse, memorizing it so I can rap it front to back and back to front. And so I might turn her down for a second, and she might interrupt a little bit. And then I'll, okay, oh, dang, that's crazy. All right, turn it back up and then get back to it. That's my phrase. When I'm not listening, I'm so sorry if I've ever told you, that's crazy. It's because, I don't know what else to say other than, wow, that's crazy. And she'll keep wanting to talk, and eventually I'll give in. The other time that I really feel interrupted, I wake up early. I'm a morning person, and I'll get up, and I'll make my coffee. I'll be ready to sit down and have my time with Jesus, and my table is set up. It's like ready for a Christian Instagram photo. Time with Jesus, hashtag blessed, love the Lord. I'm ready for it. And my beautiful wife will stroll in, she'll grab her cup of coffee, and then she'll want to sit down and talk to me while I'm trying to talk to Jesus. I got this thing going on right here. I'm me and the Lord right now. She's wanting to talk. I'm annoyed. I'm like, oh yeah, that's crazy. And she'll stay there and she'll keep talking, and she'll do you want me to pour you more coffee? No, it's okay, it's cool, I'm all right. Because I don't like being interrupted. And man, if I could have a direct line from Jesus, I'm sure he'd be saying, boy, if you don't get your butt up away from this table, embrace your wife, listen to what she has to say. I've entrusted you with her. Do not mistake what the most important thing is right now. The most important thing is that relationship, that woman I've given you to care for. But it's easy for us to miss it a little bit, especially, man, those of us who are in ministry are the biggest culprits. I think about all the times that ministry has come between the most important thing and the most important thing. I can't think about how many barbecues, birthday parties, family dinners I've had to say, I can't be there. I'm sorry, ministry happens on the weekends. Well, all of life happens on the weekends if you don't work at a church, right? It's the weekend. That's when you get together to celebrate family. And all of a sudden, ministry is competing with the mission, and we have a problem because there's a conflict here. Sometimes our career competes with our relationships. Man, I'm just grinding, I'm just working, I just got to focus on this. I don't have time for you, I don't have time to be there right now. I have to work on this. Man, I don't have time to be there for my marriage. I'm just trying to pay the bills because that's what's most important, is the roof over our head, right? We got to be secure and stable. I don't have time to be involved emotionally here. And we have these conflicts where the most important thing in our lives is all of a sudden interrupted by the most important thing in our lives. So what do we do? What's the wisdom that we can follow? We look to Nehemiah 5, verse 6. It's a very short verse. When I heard their complaints, I was very angry. That's understandable, right? Why would he be angry? He's leading this ministry, this wall-building ministry. He's leading this mission from God. He's leading people. He's got to deal with politics. He's got to deal with people threatening to kill them. It says that they were working on the wall with shovels in one hand and swords in the other. He's got this project, this thing that hasn't been accomplished in 150 years, and he's trying to get it done in 52 days, and they're making good progress. And now they want to step to him with these issues. They want to step to him with things that can get done later. I'm sorry that it's rough, but we're making great progress. We just got to get to the end. We'll be done in 52 days, and then I'll settle all of this. I'll get it all taken care of, and I'll worry about it. Or he could have even just said, I'm not poor. Doesn't affect me. I'm sorry about it. Maybe that's your problem. Maybe you need to figure out why you're poor and why you're disadvantaged and how you should have made some different decisions earlier. Maybe you should have stayed in Babylon. Maybe you should get to work. Maybe you should just figure that out because I got bigger things going on. I'm working with what God is doing. I can't stop the train for your little issues. I'm sorry that it's been tough. I hope you get by. Nehemiah could have been angry for a multitude of reasons. He could have been absolutely distraught with them. But he's not. In fact, we find out that he's angry because he's listening to what they're saying. One of the biggest lessons I've learned in marriage doesn't have anything to do with love, romance, relationships, sharing a space. It's been about what it's like to be a woman in the world. I was raised by a single mom. If you asked me before, hey, what's it like for a woman? Is it tough? Is it difficult? I'm like, oh yeah, trust me, I get it. My mom, she raised me just by herself. I get it. But as I've stepped into marriage, I realized, yeah, I get it, but I ain't got it. I know, but I don't know. When I sound most foolish, in my life, was when I defined my wife's experience, an experience that I've never had. You notice Nehemiah didn't begin to define the experience that he didn't have for himself. He didn't begin to tell them what it was like to live their lives because he hadn't lived it. He didn't begin to define for them a space he had never lived in and how to respond to something he never had to respond to. One of the most difficult things in this past few months, in the months leading up to this election, one of the most difficult parts has been the vitriol that's been sent across the bow on both ends, and to stand in the middle of it, and to stand there. And I'll tell you, be completely honest, I work at a massive church that sits on the border of Irvine and Newport. I work at a predominantly white church on a predominantly white staff. There are all these conversations happening around me about race and about the experience of a minority. And what's most painful is to log on to Facebook, see articles posted, and all of a sudden read the comments. And yeah, the comments are heartbreaking. If you've ever been a part of any of it, you know it's heartbreaking. But what really twists the knife is when those comments are from Christians. Because my deepest fear of being a part of a large church as a minority is that I'm not actually accepted. That I'm accepted based on my talent, based on my ability to preach, based on my ability to articulate things, stay in my lane, dress the way that I'm supposed to, talk about the things that I'm supposed to, talk about Jesus, but don't talk about any other experiences that have made you who you are. And it confirms this deep fear that you are as isolated as you think you are. And it's terrifying and it's painful. And some of the solutions that are offered, in the name of Jesus, I'm just colorblind. Now that might sound good in a tweet, it might sound great on a Facebook post or great on Instagram, but I don't live in that vacuum of a world. I remember when I was in the sixth grade, my brother came home. We used to take the bus to school. And he came home, and he just walked in, and he looked super confused. My parents weren't home yet, and he walked in, and he just looked at me super confused, like he was kind of upset. He was kind of about to cry. I was like, hey, dude, what's wrong? Why are you late? We usually walk together. Where'd you go? He'd found a friend's backpack, and he took his friend's backpack to him, walked it down the hill, took it down to him. Knock, knock. Hey, here's your backpack. You left it on the bus. Oh, my God, don't touch the backpack. Why are you touching it? What do you mean? Here's your backpack. Please put the backpack down. Okay. What's the problem? You're going to get it dirty. Why? My hands aren't dirty. Brown people are dirty. What do you mean, why? Don't touch it. As my brother explains that story to me, I don't have the option to say, there's no color in the world. I don't have the option to say, Jesus doesn't see your color. He just sees you. And there's this painful experience whenever any of us in any context begin to define someone's experience that we don't have. That's not the model of Nehemiah. It's not the model of Jesus. If we're going to be who God has called us to be, we must first enter by listening. We must first be willing to hear. We must first be willing to just engage on that level to begin to understand. When Nehemiah showed up, it says that he stopped and he listened. Verse 7 says that he was angry, and after thinking it over, I spoke out against these nobles and officials. I told them, you're hurting your own relatives by charging interest when they borrow money. Then I called a public meeting to deal with the problem. So you have to notice something in the passage. What Nehemiah heard with his ears, he sought to see with his eyes. When his ears weren't closed off to the cry of the oppressed, his eyes could see the pain of the injustice. And when his ears could hear and his eyes could see, his heart could feel the way that God's heart felt. See, when we begin to listen, we begin to see more. And as we hear more and see more, we begin to feel more. We begin to connect with what God is doing in that moment. And that's what God is after. That's why the work had to stop. Because God's concern was always for these people. So as Nehemiah listened and as he heard, he acted and he moved on that. It could not wait. It absolutely couldn't wait. And why couldn't it wait? Was Nehemiah building a new wall? Was he building a wall that didn't exist previously? Nehemiah was rebuilding walls. He was rebuilding walls that had been destroyed, walls that stood around God's city. God's city with God's people, where God's temple was at the center, where God was worshipped. Yet God allowed that to be torn down. Why? Why would God ever allow such a thing? God allowed those walls to be torn down because of the very injustices that they were participating in to rebuild them. The very reason they had walls to build were because of the practices that they were now participating in to build them. And so it had to stop. Jeremiah, who prophesied before all of this would happen, that prophesied and called out and said, turn. Before any of this happened, said it this way. In Nehemiah 22, verse 3. This is what the Lord says, be fair-minded and just. Do what's right. Help those who have been robbed. Rescue them from their oppressors. Quit your evil deeds. Do not mistreat foreigners, orphans, and widows. Stop murdering the innocent. If you obey me, there will always be a descendant of David sitting on the throne here in Jerusalem. Verse 5, but if you refuse to pay attention to this warning, I swear by my own name, says the Lord, that this palace will become a pile of rubble. Throughout all of Scripture, God had no real interest in buildings or building projects. God didn't demand that a temple be built. David desired for it, then his son built it. But God never said, man, I need a temple. God was never concerned with walls standing and walls standing forever. God said, if these walls stand for anything other than justice and righteousness, may they be torn down. But if these walls are going to be sheltering injustice, then take them away. See, God, through all of his prophets, through Jeremiah, Isaiah, Amos, from the beginning to the end, even in Jesus, there was always a call to righteousness, to being right with God. Turn from your idols, follow me. But there was always a call to righteousness with one another. When we're missing one of those, our righteousness is incomplete and it's not integrated and it doesn't represent who God is. Righteousness apart from compassion is just religion. Righteousness apart from God, it's merely compassion, is a shallow compassion because it's limited to your resources. But when I'm compassionate and I'm with God, I'm plugged into the resources that he has. I can plug into the grace that he can offer, the comfort and the hope that he can offer. See, when we offer just compassion, when we're just giving a hug, but we don't have a greater hope, we're missing the boat too. God is calling us to integrate all of who we are into following him. 1 John 4:19 says, we love because he first loved us. Our right relationship with Jesus inspires us to love those around us. You ever met those people who love God and hate people? Just like, I love Jesus, but I hate me some people. Can't stand folks. Gosh, they're the worst. And then they light up folks on their Facebook. That's like, I'm just like constantly on my Facebook feed deciding where I'm not going to reply. I'm just like, don't do it. Don't bring it down on them. Just let them go. I'm tempted to be a person who loves God and hates people. I'm tempted to be a person who just loves Jesus, who wants to sit at his table and have his Instagrammable moment with God and disregard my wife. We're all tempted to love God and hate people. And God says it's impossible. 1 John 4:20 says, if anyone says they love God and they hate their brother or sister, they are a liar. God never allowed us to have some separated righteousness. Throughout all of Scripture, he condemned it. Amos 5:21 through 24 says this regarding their religious activities. I hate all your show and pretense, the hypocrisy of your religious festivals and solemn assemblies. I won't accept your burnt offerings and grain offerings. I won't notice all your choice peace offerings. Away with your noisy hymns of praise. I won't listen to the music of your harps. Instead, I want to see a mighty flood of justice, an endless river of righteous living. For some of you guys, that's like religious jargon. It's like, cool, now explain it. I'm going to read it from the Message translation. If you're new to church, it's not actually a translation. It's a paraphrase written by Eugene Patterson that people reference because the language is more up to date. Some of you guys walked in with the King James Version and you're just so mad that we're going to read the Message right now. I can't believe y'all going to read that in church. Y'all laughing because you know. But I want to read it because I think Eugene, let's say it's Eugene, say it's not God. I think he really captures it. I can't stand your religious meetings. I'm fed up with your conferences and conventions. I want nothing to do with your religion projects, your pretentious slogans and goals. I'm sick of your fundraising schemes, your public relations and image making. I've had all I can take of your noisy ego music. When was the last time you sang to me? Do you know what I want? I want justice, oceans of it. I want fairness, rivers of it. That's what I want. That's all that I want. You may not like the message, but I think he kind of went in, right? God has never been interested in our religious activity if it's apart from righteousness with one another. God's never been interested. If your mission from God comes at the expense or the exploitation of someone else, it ceases to be your mission from God. And Nehemiah demonstrates that. Nehemiah demonstrates that perfectly. Jesus said it this way: the world will know that you're my disciples by the way that you love one another. So we're called to compassion. On the end of that, he also says, the world will know that you're my disciples by the way that you love one another. Love one another as I have loved you. We see the presence of compassion with one another, but the presence of a relationship with God. God is calling us in this season to be interrupted by compassion. If we've lived in a segregated, non-integrated way, if we've sought righteousness with God with no intention of ever seeking after those who would need your help, who would need your attention, where is God calling you to step into that, to celebrate differently, to celebrate your religious festivals in a way that honors who God is, that honors God's character? Where are you called to be compassionate? Some of you might have to go far. Some of you might just be right at home. A few weeks ago, I was walking to the gym. And as I was walking there, I was passing by this gym where people pay hundreds of dollars to go. There's a homeless guy sleeping next to it. That was kind of easy for me to push off because it was like, well, at least he's not moving. And then I kept walking. And there was another guy who walked next to me, and he just kept walking next to me, and it was like he was following me, but in front of me. It was like every time I turned right, he needed to make a right. And for as long as I needed to go straight, he needed to go straight. And when he needed to make a left, I needed to make a left. I was like, stop following me, but you're in front of me, though? Like, and it took me that whole walk to realize that I can share the sidewalk with someone and live in a completely different world, a world that I'll never know unless I seek it. A world I'll never understand unless I venture to go. God is calling us to be the type of people in this season to venture to go, to hear the cry of those who are in hurt, those who are seeking it. God is inviting us into that. How will we respond? How will we respond in this next season? I believe that God is calling each and every person in this community to follow Jesus in an integrated way, and in a real way. Will you pray with me? God, I pray for this community, Lord, as we talk about seeking you, seeking to be compassionate, seeking to love you and to love others in meaningful ways. God, would you lead us in that? Holy Spirit, would you speak to hearts now as they think about what it means for them to be compassionate, what it means for them to listen, what it means to them to step into someone else's world, to seek to be merciful, to be compassionate. Would you lead us in that, God, in a powerful way? When I was younger, I didn't understand some of where I'd come from. I see a psychologist named Buddy, Dr. Buddy. We meet once a week. And last week he was talking about understanding your story and how that promotes mental health. I'm like, cool, bro. Whatever. I'm just trying to get right. And so he's like, seek out answers, ask questions. And we were talking this week, and I was talking to my mom. My mom has jumped in at Mariner. She's just about to finish Rooted. She's a part of the Knot ministry that serves foster kids. They bring them on campus here. They get them together. They're able to play in the student center, and they hang out. I was like, Mom, what drives you to serve there? What's the deal? And she's like, what do you mean, what's the deal? I'm like, well, why do you serve there? I get like, that's awesome, but you have to wake up. You have to be there. You have to like make phone calls. We'll get you out of bed. We'll get you there. She's like, I used to live where they lived. I stayed in the same foster home that they're in. Some of these kids literally sleep in the room that I did when I didn't have a home. Well, what do you mean? What? And I had to stop and wait. What? Our church, see, this is where stuff gets our church impacts a foster kid, a girl like my mom who didn't have a home, not because she was abandoned, but because her home wasn't safe, because she was abused and mistreated, and it was deemed she wasn't safe in her own home, around her own blood, around her own family, so she had to go and stay with strangers. Our church ministers to those people, cares for those people. That's seeking justice. That's seeking compassion. I believe that God is calling some of you into that tonight in all different kinds of ways. And you're going to hear more about those. We have one of my good friends, Natalie, who's here tonight to share with you guys. You guys welcome Natalie as she comes up. So Natalie is a part of our local outreach team. She runs our LCC, our Lighthouse Community Centers. They run ESL programs. They're there with families on Mini Street. They know stories. They get to walk in a house and see where these people are living, to understand the pain. They listen, they hear. And she's going to share with you a story and sort of share her heart and how you can serve that way. Is that about right?
Yeah, absolutely. Right, thanks for having me, Wes. Yeah. Well, like Wes said, I'm with the Lighthouse Community Centers, and I'm so excited. Sunday night, how are we doing? How are we doing tonight? You guys doing good? I am so excited to be here with you guys and to share a little bit about what we do. And I know I'm seeing a lot of new faces out in the crowd, and a lot of you guys might not know who I am, but Sunday night, I know a lot about you. And the reason I know so much about you is because I have seen you guys respond to the Lighthouse Community Centers in incredible ways. I think of tutors like Juan, who over the last year and the year before showed up to help kids with their homework each and every single day at our community center on Mini Street in Santa Ana. I think of my friend Rhodey, who showed up and done the whole hip-hop class thing with our kids, doing choreography and all that fun jazz. And I think I see faces who I saw at our summer camp that came to camp with kids, many of which who would never left the 8-mile radius of their community before. And so I'm just so excited because you guys have loved our kids, and I'm Mexican, so I'm from a communal culture, so you love my kids, so I love you guys, and that's why I'm really excited to be here with you guys. And I'm here to talk a little bit about Christmas and what that means, because whether you're ready or not today on this 80-degree day, when you guys stepped foot in the community centers, you guys were met with this winter wonderland with our fake Christmas trees, and you're like, whoa, Christmas, I'm not ready for that. Well, and the other thing, too, is we know there's two kinds of people in the world, right? There's the kind that start playing Christmas music all year round, and there's the kind that insist that you wait. It is a crime to play Christmas before Thanksgiving. Are any of those people in the room? I want to know who I'm talking to. All right, there's a few of you. I know. I'm sorry. Well, bear with me. See, I'm here to start aiming our hearts because compassion, did you guys hear Wes talk about compassion and justice? Two key words. Those don't just happen. They take intentionality. And so I love that during this weekend when we launch Celebrate Differently, we as a church begin to aim our hearts with compassion and justice in a way that stands with the marginalized and the poor. But most importantly, with the people that I like to call those that are forgotten in our communities. And when I look at the Christmas story, as we begin to think about what we're celebrating, you guys ready to talk about the Christmas story? Okay, here we go. When we look at the Christmas story, I think about that family in that little manger that you guys will probably bring out and set around your Christmas tree at some point this year. And I see a family that, you have Mary and Joseph, we have baby Jesus, and they remind me of two things. The first is that God loved us so much, he sent his one and only son, right? He saw us, and he sent his son. And when we look at the life of Jesus, we saw that Jesus lived life with us. He walked with us. He stood with us, and he listened to us. Did you guys hear Wes talk about what it means to listen to the outcry? There's cries, but will you hear them? Jesus listened to us in his life. And so we know that we're not forgotten, and we get to carry that message to others during dark times. And then the second thing that I'm reminded of as I look at this family that spent the night in a manger, I'm reminded of the families who don't have a place to call home, who don't have their own bed to sleep at night, and who are not welcome. And I think that the Christmas story and this family and the Christmas story prompts me to remember those families who may not always feel welcome, that are living in the shadows, who have been forgotten. I think of the refugee families in Orange County. I think of the immigrant that lives just 8 miles away in Santa Ana, who, especially over the last year, there's been a lot of pretty nasty rhetoric being shared about their families and their community. And we get to show up and we get to stand with these families and we get to hear them and we get to remind them that they are not forgotten and that we see them. Because compassion and justice, friends, what it really means, it's all about people. It means that people come first. So while you guys are, we're setting up all our Christmas plans, will we stop and see people? And I mean really see people and tell them that they're not forgotten. Well, there's two ways that you can do that and that you guys get to step in and be a part of as a church when we celebrate differently. The first is you guys saw that there's tags on each and every single one of those Christmas trees, right? Well, there's ages and there's different toys, but what you guys now know is that every single one of those tags has a story. There is a story. There's a reason that every single one of those tags is here. We have them numbered down to the one. And I know that in the hustle and bustle, because we talk about holidays, it prompts a lot of mixed feelings. This in the hustle and bustle of it, there's Christmas shopping lists, there's malls to be visited, there's families, there's politics at the Thanksgiving table, and there's just a lot that will overwhelm us in this season. And that is the lie that we begin to believe, that in the vast array of all the needs, what can I do that will make a difference? Well, the key is to do for one what you wish that you could do for the many. That's where you will show up and you will make a difference. When we look at every single one of those Christmas tags, we know that every single one of those Christmas tags represents a story. A story like the two little girls whose home I just visited last week for my Lighthouse Community Centers, who, guess what, are going to be celebrating Christmas for the first time this year without their father because they lost him unexpectedly. But I can tell you that the good news is that we have already surrounded this family. And the mother who was left to wonder, how am I going to continue to support my two little girls? How am I going to begin to create new memories for them this Christmas? Well, when you say yes to bringing Christmas for these little girls, we get to leverage what you guys bring and multiply the blessing, because we have volunteers that are going to come in and surround this family with love, make sure that these girls have mentors that will walk through life with them all the way until they start filling out their college applications. And like Aunt Marie, another young lady at our community center, there will be a volunteer who has been, just like the one that's been helping her apply to med school after the fact that she's already gotten a full ride to college. But she has bigger dreams, and she's working and slowly getting the scholarship, seeing the scholarships roll in, because we leverage and multiply what you offer with the help and the work of our volunteers. The second way that you can say yes to celebrating differently this year is through, how many of you guys like a good Christmas party? You guys like to party at Christmas time? Come on, that's the best part about Christmas. All right, a few of you guys. Well, we have incredible Christmas parties. We have over $1,000 opportunities. When you go to our website and you search Celebrate, you will see over 1,000 opportunities that we have opened up for you guys to come in and to serve and to bring your presence. And when you guys show up, you tell these families that you see them, that you really see them at events like our Foster Family Christmas Party. There are families that have decided to say yes to taking in another child, another mess to clean up out after every single dinner table and every single day, and they are tired. And when you show up and you say yes to the Foster Family Christmas Party in an event like that, and you bake the cookies, and you set the table, and you play the games, you are telling these parents of foster kids, hey, I see you. I see that you have grown weary and tired, and I'm here to give you rest for just one day. Don't worry about the mess that the kids are making while you're playing at this party. Just enjoy the moment. Enjoy what's most important, which is people, which is your family. And don't worry about the mess, because you know what? At the end of the day, when you go home, I'm going to stay and I'm going to tear down and I'm going to clean it up, because I see you. I really see you. And I want to show you that I care. And you guys have done this, because when you guys have done what you want to do for one, or sorry, what you want to do for many by doing that for just one person, it has been multiplied. Last year alone, you guys gave over $434,000 to fund global and local initiatives. You guys, that's incredible. You guys can clap. Yeah, that's been not $434,000. You guys gave over 6,000 Christmas presents. That's over 6,000 Christmas presents, over 6,000 living rooms throughout Orange County that might have been a difficult morning for families, but instead they got to open up a blessing that brought in a light that cast out the shadow that was coming in from the feelings of despair and of feeling forgotten. Instead, they got to open up a Christmas gift that brought in the light of Jesus, which is the hope and reminder that they are not alone, that they are not forgotten, is that we as a church, we see them, we love them, and we will always be there for them. And last but not least, just get this, you guys served over 4,000 hours in just 1 month over the Christmas season. And I know that you guys are going to show up and you guys are going to do this again. And don't be fooled by not forgetting that every single one of those kids, they don't just have the name of a child or a family on every single one of those tags. But let me tell you something. Every single one of those serve opportunities and every single one of those gifts is a blessing that I believe has your name written on it. Because when you say yes to God, you are saying yes to what He has planned for you. And don't you want to be a part of what God has planned for you? Don't miss out on that blessing. Don't walk right by it and don't leave it hanging on that Christmas tree or online on that website. Because I know that when you celebrate different, you'll begin to act different, you will look different, and I believe that you will influence others to do the same. And together, we will do for many because of your influence and because of the way that you showed up different, what you did for just one, it will be multiplied and done for many. So the question is, how will you celebrate different this year? What will that look like in your life? Check this out.